Lovely. Thanks very much, Jackie. Firstly, well done everybody for coming out tonight on a lovely sort of a sunny afternoon. Lots of distractions this afternoon with the tennis matches on and lots of things going on. So really great to see so many people here tonight. So. John, are you happy just to pop up the first slide, or Malcolm? Thanks. So yeah, theme of strength in weakness. It's a theme that's kind of really close to my heart, to be honest, in lots of ways. And thanks, Simon, just for leading us so gently and Will in worship. And I think Jackie's testimony as well really sort of just preempts a lot of what I'm going to say. And I just want to read from it's 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 1 to 10. So just going to read starting chapter 12. So this is the Apostle Paul, he's writing to the church at Corinth. It is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Christ who, 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know, or whether out of the body I do not know, God knows. Such a one was caught up to the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows, how he was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, which it is not lawful for a man to utter. Of such a one I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast, except in my infirmities. For though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool, for I will speak the truth. But I refrain lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So a very sort of alternative worldview in some ways that Paul gives us here. And just be interesting to give just a little bit of background at the church at Corinth and what was happening there. And Corinth was a very busy trade route on the Mediterranean, and it had a lot of diverse cultures in it. And that diversity is a good thing, isn't it? And it was reflected actually within the church. So lots of sort of people from different backgrounds, and that's exactly what church should be. I think, you know, a church where everybody dresses the same, believes exactly the same things, looks the same, you know, that would be you know, not that healthy in many ways. But so there's a lot of diversity at Corinth, but actually there were some struggles that Paul was addressing relating to the different sort of groups, really, that had grown up at the church at Corinth. And there were four main groups, and Paul lists them actually in 1 Corinthians 1:12. There were those who said they followed Apollos, those who said they followed Kephas, those who said they followed Paul, and those who said they followed Christ. And actually, all of these groups had their different problems. And even the in Christ group, which sounds sort of very kind of laudable, doesn't it? But actually, the difficulty with this group was they were a little faction in the church that really prided themselves on their spiritual experience. They prided themselves on the fact of revelations and a great sort of experience that they believed that God had given them. And they became quite elitist within the church. And also they thought, well, it doesn't really matter how we live because we're having these, you know, amazing sort of experiences of God. And they also started to question Paul's authority. They were saying, well, we're having these great experiences of God. And, you know, so who is Paul? You know, what does he really bring? And we have more authority than him, that they were sort of basing their strength, really, in their experience, if you like. That's an interesting thing, actually. I think sometimes experiences of God, there are things to be shared, aren't there? But actually, there are things that perhaps they're just things that are between us and the Lord sometimes as well, and not to be shared. So anyway, Paul in 1 Corinthians 12, the first six verses here, verses 1 to 6, Paul is demonstrating, sort of using this technique of writing in the third person, that actually he also has had a lot of experiences. He's had incredible experiences and encounters with God, but actually his strength and his kudos and his identity, if you like, don't belong in the spiritual experience. It's something that God has given him, and it's good, but that's not where his authority in some ways rests. And Paul had really learnt that in his life also, that from his background, he was somebody who was a strong man, who was very proud of where he'd come from. He had been, you know, describes himself as a Hebrew of the Hebrews, and really proud of his kind of Jewish heritage before he came to Christ, and based a lot of his identity and his strength really in that heritage. And he was a person who God actually, or Jesus, meets him on the Damascus Road and literally knocks him off his horse and blinds him. He's so strong that Jesus has to sort of meet him quite powerfully to start to subvert Paul's worldview, if you like, and where he really thinks strength is and where he really understands strength to be. So Paul is blinded on the Damascus Road. He encounters the risen Christ. And he has to be led, perhaps for the first time in his life. He's blind and somebody has to lead him. Somebody called Ananias, a Christian, has to come. God tells him to come and pray for Paul to receive his sight again. And I think it's interesting, actually God, if you know, God had wanted Paul to receive his sight again, he could easily have done it. He could have just clicked his fingers and said, okay, but after 3 days, Paul, we're going to make sure your sight is restored. But he doesn't. He brings to Paul somebody who is weak, somebody who is from this despised group of people that Paul has been persecuting, to actually pray for him that he would receive his sight. And in one way, he's saying, you know, your strength, Paul, isn't about you. It isn't in you, and you need other people in your life, and you need other people around you, and I'm starting to change the way you understand strength, and you understand my strength and my power and the how that works. Has anybody here heard of Jean Vanier? Yeah, a few of you? Yeah. Amazing, amazing man of God from a Catholic tradition. Died quite recently, actually, but Jean Vanier, in the 1960s, he became very aware of people, particularly with mental disabilities, which affected their mental and sometimes their physical functioning. He really felt that they were on the edges of the church and not kind of included, and really had a heart to include them. So what Jean Vanier did is he started communities for these people, and they were called LASH communities, or the ARC communities. It started with one community, and it grew and developed, and more communities developed. And Jean Vanier was really excited about what was happening, and he just threw himself into this work, a sort of heart and soul. And he worked so hard at it and worked so hard trying to make this work that in the early 1970s, he was actually hospitalized for 3 months with exhaustion, and it sounds like he was on the edge really of a nervous breakdown. And somebody had to come to Jean Vanier and said, you know, Jean, you can't do this by yourself. A bit like what had happened really with Paul. He said, you can't do this on yourself, Jean, it just won't work. And Jean Vanier had to go from this place of actually trying to run around and plug every gap himself and sort it all out and make it work himself. I don't know about you, but do you ever try and do that? Sometimes that could be maybe it's at home and at work, and it's like, well, unless I do it, nobody else will. Unless I plug this gap, unless I, you know, keep all of the plate spinning, unless it's down to me. But actually God spoke to Jean Vanier and said, no, that's never going to work. You're going to have to recognize your need of others and your vulnerability. So that was something that Paul learnt. He learnt that it wasn't about strength in himself. It wasn't about strength in spiritual experience, which he sort of expounds and talks about in the first six verses here. But he's really following an Old Testament model of how in the Old Testament, God often worked through characters who were not perfect, who were weak, who were, you know, probably wouldn't be the people that we would choose. Can anybody think offhand of any sort of Old Testament characters where, you know, God used them and worked through them, but they were very weak or unwilling? Any, have a little think for a moment. Yes, Peter? Gideon, yeah, he's the first one I think of as well. Yeah, Gideon and the Amalekites. And yeah, he was a very sort of uncertain character, wasn't he? And yeah, any others? David, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, Rachel. David and Goliath. Yeah. Yeah, and I think with David as well, he, you know, when he was anointed king by Samuel, he wasn't even with his brothers. He was so unlikely to be the one. He wasn't even considered that it would possibly be David. I think also of Isaac and Ishmael and Jacob and Esau, that we see that the covenant going down, God's sort of covenant going down through Isaac and Jacob. Yet Ishmael and Esau, Ishmael, and you know, there's a place for Ishmael, but he was described as a wild ox of a man, that he's strong, he's you know, has natural endowments. And similarly with Esau, you know, we hear about Esau, this character who goes out hunting and bringing back food for his, you know, for his father and all that sort of thing. But it's through the weaker that God often works. It's through Isaac. It's then through Jacob. It's through the sons who were not the firstborn. It's through the sons who were, you know, favoured by their mothers, not by their fathers. Cain and Abel, what can they tell us about strength and weakness as well? So I am dotting around a little bit in the Old Testament as well tonight, as I realise that. Can we just pop up the next slide, Malcolm? Is that okay? Just So Cain and Abel. Has anybody ever thought, why did God reject Cain's sacrifice and yet he accepted Abel's sacrifice? A few sort of ideas about it, really. One of them is that, you know, Abel was a shepherd and brought an offering of a sheep, or that Cain was a tiller of the land and brought something from the land. But actually, just researched a little bit around this recently, and there's a strong idea that God is trying to tell us something through the names of Abel and of Cain. The Abel, the word is Hebrew word hevel, meaning breath. And there are other words actually in the Old Testament that mean breath. There are nephesh, ruach. But actually, Hebrew words have a really deep meaning and connotation sometimes that they try to get across. And this word hevel, Abel, actually specifically means a shallow, a fleeting, or an ephemeral breath. Almost this sense of actually, God, I am dependent upon you for my every breath. And there is a thought that actually Abel brings his offering to God with a sense of, God, I'm weak and I'm dependent upon you, and I'm just bringing my offering to you from that place of dependence, from that place of trust. Whereas Cain means to acquire, to possess, to own. It's actually got a similar root meaning to the word Baal. To exercise power over someone or something. And there's a thought that with Cain, why God rejects his offering is that he's playing the economics game. He's playing the way of the world. He's trying to give to get something back from God. He's trying to almost use God to strengthen his own hand and his own sort of position, if you like. And perhaps the secret is in the names of why God rejects Cain's offering but accepts the sacrifice of humility, of weakness, if you like, from Abel. So back to Paul, and verse 7, he talks about his thorn in the flesh, this man who is learning that you know, strength is found much more in weakness than in what he always used to think it was. Strength in his own sort of pedigree or his own experience. What was Paul's thorn in the flesh? Various sort of thoughts about that, aren't there? So a lot of people think it may be to do with his eyes. Once heard Don Latham, who used to preach here, he thought it was a person. Don used to think it was a person. And lots of interesting things can be put forward. And I think maybe it was obvious to people at the time, you know, what Paul's thorn was. But the beauty for us is actually, in not knowing, we can substitute our thorn, you know, in place of whatever Paul was struggling with. So, for example, for Paul, it may have been his eyes, but for some other people, maybe it's something you're struggling with is a health issue on and on, or perhaps it's a financial problem that just won't seem to resolve. Perhaps it's pain in your marriage. Perhaps it's a work situation. It could be many, many things. And the beauty is actually we can substitute that and bring that to God and say, Lord, can you still work in this situation? And actually we can hear Jesus. Jesus spoke to Paul, verse 8, and says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Just a little testimony. About 15, or over 15 years ago now, I started work for the ambulance service and was training to become a paramedic. It happened then a lot differently in terms of how training worked, and I'd gone from quite a gentle sort of background to really what was quite a quasi-military sort of environment, and the first months were really, really difficult. And a number of people sort of said, well, Jeremy, you know, you're not strong enough, you're not assertive enough, you're too quiet, all this sort of thing. And I always remember, I think I'd been in about 4 months, and there was a huge, big Scottish paramedic called Mike Souter who used to really sort of train us and frighten us in equal measure. And I remember Mike kind of coming up to me and saying, Jeremy, you're not going to make the grade, and walking away. And that was it, you know. And I subsequently got on very, very well with Mike, actually. He was a really good guy, good paramedic. But it was difficult at that time. And actually, I remember after one shift, I went home and was chatting with my wife, Claire, and I said, I've got to give it in. I can't keep doing this. And we'd really felt that God had called me to it. And Claire had sort of tears in her eyes and looked at me, and she said, No, I think the opposition is because it's God's call. I think that's why there's opposition. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep going. And anyway, around that time, I can't remember if somebody gave me this little card or if I bought it. Can we just pop up the next slide, Malcolm? Is that okay? It's a little card here, which is actually based on 1 Corinthians 12, verse 8. And it just says, Malcolm's going to put the words up so everybody can see it. His grace is sufficient. God does not ask us to do the things that are easy to us naturally. He only asks us to do the things we are perfectly fitted to do by his grace. God does not ask us to do the things that are easy to us naturally. He only asks us to do the things we are perfectly fitted to do by his grace. And what I did during that time was actually took this little card and I slipped it into the top pocket of my ambulance uniform. Along with a little prophecy from a lady, lovely lady called Liz Evans in our old church who had sort of prophesied something about my job. And I used to have this with the little prophecy tucked in my top pocket. And by the grace of God, actually, he really took me on. I left the ambulance service last year. I'm still a paramedic in just a different context. But actually, what I found particularly helpful, enjoyed doing was working with people when they started and they were trained to be paramedics and did a lot of mentoring and just helping people to find their feet. And actually, if I'd given up, that wouldn't have happened, you know, wouldn't have happened for me, wouldn't have happened for them. And it was really because of God's grace, because actually, in many ways, I wasn't adequate. I want to tell a little story and then we're going to just sort of draw to a close and look at maybe just breaking up perhaps into some groups and some prayer with a little bit more worship in the end. It's a story about another godly Frenchman. It's good, these godly Frenchmen. We have them in our church, don't we, in the shape of Fee, who came to my mind. So it's a story of somebody called Nicholas Herman. And Nicholas, he was born in France in 1614. And he was a failed soldier, had a leg injury. And came out of the military, and he joined a Christian community in 1640 near Paris. And he felt a failure. He was rough, he was awkward, and actually within the Christian community that he joined, he was very much aware that the people around him were far brighter than he was, had far more gifts, had far more ability, that they were really enthusiastic about theology and could write things and do things that he couldn't. I felt he wasn't good enough in many ways, but he loved God, and he just really yielded his life to God and just worked simply in a kitchen in his community for many, many years. And then as he became older and the kitchen work became too heavy for him, he worked as a sandal maker. And he experienced God and just said, well, God, I'm just going to walk in relationship with you. I'm just going to talk to you each moment of the day that I can. And I'm just going to draw upon you. And I'm just going to really just try to walk in your presence at every single moment and give back what I can, a little bit like Abel, just in dependence and humility before you. I'm just going to try and walk with you. Now, he was known as Lawrence of the Resurrection. It's a great name, isn't it, Lawrence of the Resurrection? Or better known as Brother Lawrence, as we know him today. And his walk with God, which he felt was so inferior to everybody else's, he put down in a journal, in a book called The Practice of the Presence of God. And that book is still widely read today. It wasn't so much at the time, or actually just after the time of Nicholas or Brother Lawrence himself. But actually today it's translated into many different languages. It is looked at in university curriculums. It's used devotionally by many people over the world. And I think actually Sally Petit, I remember listening to her on Listen Again last year, spoke on the practice of the presence of God and actually mentioned Brother Lawrence then when she spoke about it. And, you know, Nicholas, he didn't do anything. All he did in his weakness was offer his life to God. And actually of the luminaries around him at the time, many of them, we know nothing about what happened, but about Nicholas, about Brother Lawrence, we do. We do know that he actually, that offering to God, simple offering in humility to God, God actually took it and used it. And really, again, God's strength, Jesus' strength, just perfected in that weakness. And Nicholas had learned, I think, similarly to Paul, that actually the values of the kingdom of God, in many ways, it's an upside-down kingdom. It's a kingdom where the poor are rich. It's a kingdom where the people who don't matter in society matter intensely to God. It's a kingdom where life comes through death, fruitfulness through self-denial, strength, God's strength through weakness. What about us? What are we facing at the moment? What areas of pain, what areas of weakness, what areas where we're just feeling really, really inadequate? What are we being called to do? Interestingly, at the moment, having left the ambulance service, I'm in a role where suddenly I'm feeling exactly the same things as I felt 15 years ago and calling out to God and thinking, God, where are you in this? And I even saw a milk float the other day drive past with milk and more written on it and thinking, perhaps I could be a milkman. Perhaps I could be a milkman and finish early and go and have coffee with friends and just sort out my garden and all that sort of stuff. But God doesn't always take us out of things, does he? And I think one of the things with Jesus is staying with things is really important. And we can sometimes learn more through that. And for me, at the moment, what I'm finding is actually I'm pressing into God more and more. And suddenly his word's alive for me again. Suddenly he's speaking to me really personally through his word, particularly through the Psalms, but in a way that hasn't happened and hasn't happened maybe for many, many years. And Paul certainly learnt this. He learnt verse 10, when I'm weak, I'm strong. And I think that's really something at the heart of the gospel, isn't it? And something actually as churches, how do we understand God working through our weakness? I'm often a bit uncomfortable of the term mega church. I know you've got to call a big church something, but actually what can happen actually is we can start playing the game of Cain, and we've got to think, how do we really keep the gospel values at the heart of how we build our lives, build our churches? So what I was thinking, I think it would be really good if we can just maybe break into, if we're comfortable with it, just break into groups of maybe three or four and just pray with one another. So pray with one another, just share together, just around areas where we're feeling inadequate, where we're feeling that we need God's grace, where we're just feeling that we need God's strength to really come through for us. If you can't think of anything, if you've got a testimony of God's strength and weakness that you can share and think would actually encourage somebody else, then by all means use that. But I just thought maybe just for 5 or 10 minutes, I don't know, Simon, are you able to just play a bit of background music as we do that? Or would that be okay? And Will, sorry, Will, yeah, I wasn't doing it to forget you at all. So yeah, let's just split into little groups and we'll just bring those areas of weakness, just share the things you're comfortable sharing, and just pray for one another for 5 or 10 minutes, and then I think Claire will probably come up and close things in prayer after that.